The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, all accounted for. Brady's here, Rich is here, Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Good. That was a very average.
You didn't want to say it was a good one because Brady was going to jump down your throat for saying something like that.
I just thought I'd start immediately with something different.
What'd you say? I don't even know.
Yeah, he's not paying attention.
I wasn't even listening.
That's all right. Burger Bar was good last night.
Oh, my gosh, what a blast.
It was a lot of fun last night.
Packed.
Though, every time we go to the burger, every time we do trivia, it always seems like there's one or two questions that people are debating if we gave the right answer.
Oh, absolutely. They come up after every round and say,
I'm not so sure about that.
And, of course, Shay, your son, who made up all the questions last night, was absolutely terrified about a couple of them.
Very defensive.
One in particular was, who was the all-time Red Sox home run leader?
Run.
He was starting to believe that maybe Ortiz had passed Ted Williams. And he said, well, I looked at Wikipedia, then I went to Google, and he went to like seven different sources. And six of them said it was Ted Williams with 521, but one of them said Ortiz had passed him, so he was very nervous.
Our very own sales guy, Jeff, got mad at me because one of the questions was which quarterback completed his first pass, which Hall of Fame quarterback completed his first pass to himself for minus 4 yards?
Right.
And the answer is Brett Favre. He goes, well, I would have had that, but Brett Favre's not in the Hall of Fame. And I'm saying to myself, what do you mean? He's not in the Hall of Fame? I go, is that possible? I go, I don't think that's true. And, of course, he was inducted in 2016. Like, you know, sometimes you forget who's in, who's not. And he was so, like, not even questioning. It was like, well, what are you wrong?
And at the end of it, afterwards, some guy comes up, gets 2 inches out of my face, and he goes, you know, there are other baseball teams besides the Boston Red Sox. I'm like, I don't make the questions.
Well, we do. We kind of give you like a home flavor.
Yeah. Right.
We are the flagship. Well, flagship. We are the radio station of the Boston Red Sox.
We're here. Nothing but Minnesota Twins questions next week.
Padres trivia next Tuesday.
I mean, who's going to get those right? So we keep it to some Red Sox stuff, though. The guy that was wearing the Red Sox hat, who was sitting with intern Sam.
Oh, really?
Intern Sam came. Intern Lance came.
Nice. Intern Lance is going to be intern Lance again this summer. He's going to be working with us again.
Funny part about that, though. Maybe
you didn't know it.
Well, you should start with this as being, you know, teaching them a little instruction here. Maybe they should say hi to me when I come in. I mean, they wouldn't even say hi to it. They would just sit there at the table, didn't even say hi to me.
There's always the possibility that not everyone on the planet knows you.
He was our intern. They're both our interns. Uh-oh. What are you talking about? They've been an intern for like a year.
All right.
How would they not know me?
But as you always say, this is why people don't like you.
Exactly. That's funny. Why am I an embarrassment all of a sudden?
You're not going to play basketball.
Yeah, the knee's still sore.
All of us. Suck it up and play typical New Yorker. Wow, Derek and Middlebury.
That hurts. Ooh. First time I'm not playing in how long? Years.
You haven't played all last week, and you were in L.A. for, like, ever.
Yeah, but I played in Venice. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, let's go play at Pomeroy Park, but I'm not even going to pressure you into playing down there. I don't think I should do that.
That's some good basketball right
there.
Yeah,
I know. Brady, don't even come, as a matter of fact.
I think I could handle
I don't think you can. It's not so much the talent. It's just the smack talking and the physicality. Please.
Yeah.
I'm begging you not to come, okay? Begging you.
If you can play there, then I'm pretty sure I can handle it.
I'm not so sure about that.
Well, let's find out. Yeah.
Well, Arnie always tells me that there's like this group of people that come play with us on Wednesday night, and he's like, wow, that guy's awesome. I'm like, not that good.
No, they're not that good.
Everybody who you think is great.
I guess I'm better than I thought.
Arnie, you last 1 minute at Pomeroy Park.
I play all the time down
you
there.
You do?
Well, yeah, in the summers.
They run you right off the court.
No,
down
not
there.
At all. Not at all. Not at all.
They have a senior citizens program.
Wow.
It's the arthritis league.
You know what I did last night that I haven't done in years? I did a shot of Jack Daniels.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I did.
Oh, and boy, you was did your life on that.
You did a shot of Jack Daniels.
Shot of Jack Daniels.
Yeah, the guy at the bar got it for him, and he's sitting there looking at
the guy
what
at the bar.
This?
The owner, maybe, Matt?
Oh, is he the owner?
Is the owner? Owns the place? There you go. There's some guy at the bar bought it for me.
Well, I didn't know specifically who bought it for
I did
you.
A shot of JD.
How was it?
I haven't done that in
6 months.
37 years.
Yeah. Yeah, you looked like it was. I mean, I wasn't sure you were going to make it.
Oh, stop it!
Were you drunk from it?
No, no.
Did you almost throw up?
No, no. Okay. It was a little, you know.
But you did it.
Brought back memories.
It was funny because usually when somebody brings you a shot, boom, it's gone. You know, yeah. You just do it. But he walked around the place
with
it.
Yeah, I kind of looked at it going, should I really do this?
And, of course, Beth is just, you know, Scooby. Really.
No! Your stomach! What are you doing? Your stomach!
Did you have a chaser? Like
no.
Coke?
No.
Wow, that's tough, yeah. Then. Yeah. I got to give you credit for this.
No chaser. I just said, you know what? Give me a straw. And no,
I just started mumbling the rest of the night. I didn't know what that meant.
The shot of JD. If it was tequila, forget about it. I've OD'd on that.
Oh, I was impressed.
I cannot really do shots. So tequila, Jack, even Captain Morgan, I don't enjoy doing. I like drinking beer.
Oh.
And I like, you know, rum and Coke, all that kind of stuff. But just straight shots, that doesn't agree with me. That brings back my college days. SoCo. That was
SoCo Saturdays. Yeah, Linden State. Yeah.
You ever put like a shot of, let's say, vodka, and then you top it off with like 7-Up, and then you bang it against the counter so it all mixes up, and then you drink? That's easy to do. That tastes good.
Someone always buys me a doctor, you know, McGillicuddy. That stuff is like mouthwash. You can have about 5 of them, and then it suddenly occurs to you that you had 5 of them.
Yeah, but Dr. McGillicuddy's is like only like 30 proof.
I don't know.
This is like 80 proof.
Go ahead and have 2 or 3 of them and see how you feel.
The worst is Jägermeister.
Oh. Yeah, that tastes like licorice.
That's
horrible.
What proof is that? Like 1?
Like 80.
Is it a billion? It tastes like...
No, it's strong.
Is it?
Very strong.
I don't like that at all.
Oh, yeah, Jaeger, Jack, Captain, they're all in the same vein. They're all strong. Dr. McGillicuddy's is a schnapps, which is weaker.
Oof, good.
It tastes better.
It
tastes better.
I always feel like I can talk to people because I've just downed some mouthwash.
There's our listeners right now going, what are you talking about? I do all 3 in one night. What are you talking about, you knuckleheads?
Oh, but Jägermeister, man. I can tell you some stories about friends who've had a little too much of that.
What do our listeners drink
the
most?
That stuff is boom, boom, out go the lights, baby.
Vodka, tequila, or Jack Daniel, or
I don't know.
Scotch.
Why don't we find out?
Arnie, next week I'll buy you a Four Horsemen, which is...
What the hell is that?
Well, it's a shot, but in the shot is a one shot of Jim Beam, one of Jack Daniels, one of Johnny Walker Black, and one of Jose Cuervo.
That just sounds horrible.
So that's 4 parts in each.
So it's one big shot glass?
Yeah.
It's like a greatest hits album.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That's like taking your steak, baked potato salad, and dessert and mixing it up in a blender and saying, here's your meal.
I'm sure somebody's
done
that.
Who the hell would do that?
You could also have the three wise men, which is 1 part scotch, 1 part Kentucky bourbon whiskey.
Oh, that's harsh.
And
the Kentucky bourbon.
Yeah, well, it's rough.
First time texter, best single booze shot, Jameson's.
Jameson? I've done Jameson.
That's up here. I remember one time we were in college and we gave a buddy of ours, we said, here's a bunch of money, just come back with booze. He came back with Kahlua and cream.
But you could do that at least. You're not going to get sick from that.
What the hell are you doing?
Can't you make white Russians with that?
That's pretty tasty. I go, get out of here. I go, we want to get drunk, not drink white Russians.
Yeah, you get full if you have too many
white
Russians.
Oh, my goodness. There's something wrong with you, buddy. Get some booze in here.
You could do Malibu.
Bourbon, baby, Keith in South Burlington said.
Yeah, if you drink bourbon, you're way too tough for me. That's
remember
for sure.
Boone's Farm? Saturday night at college, you got about $3 on you. Go get some Boone's Farm.
Is that Mad Dog 2020 type stuff? Is that
it's wine. Boone's Farm is wine.
Yeah. It's always the cheapest wine. It's what everybody would come back to the dorm with.
MD 2020, I think, is like 30 cents or something like that. It's just horrible.
I have had less than 4 glasses of wine in my entire life.
That's 4 more than I've had.
So you never had the
Boone's
Farm?
Never have even tried it.
I don't like wine.
Yeah, I don't like wine either.
Of all my vices, that's not one of them.
Yeah. No, you got to add a little sugar to that or something. Ugh. I don't like the way it tastes. It tastes like crap.
I'm not classy enough to drink wine.
No, I'm not. That's true. I'm not a classy guy either. White,
really?
Red. I don't go for that. All right, we got a busy show. Lots going on. A busy sports day. Brady, tell everybody what's coming up this week. What's coming up on the show?
Coming up this week, well, you said trivia was great. Remember, Amazon Echo device is how you can listen to us. Say enable 101.3 ESPN and then just open 101.3 ESPN after that. I did get a haircut and shave. Nice of you guys to notice
today.
Yes,
we did. We noticed.
We were getting to it. We were too busy talking about liquor.
You didn't mention it.
Well, you didn't say anything about me.
What? You shaved your 2 hairs?
That's amazing. You don't know anything different about me.
You got different glasses.
Yes, brand new, different glasses, different frames, different.
They're kind of like a leopard print.
Yeah,
they look like a 90-year-old woman would wear.
Wow,
named Thelma. or something like that.
It's like Seinfeld, Gloria Vanderbilt collection.
Maybe we'll take a picture and put it up on Facebook later on. We'll have people vote, good or not good.
Mistake of the day, you can get in 802-655-6672. Brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. The NFL's got a new anthem policy. We'll talk about that. Doug Kazarian, ESPN SportsCenter anchor, 435. Buster only at 5. Yeah. More NFL rule changes, but first, all right. Game 5 is tonight. You've had a couple of you've had a day now to process the Game 4 loss. How you feeling, Cavs Celtics?
I'm not feeling overly confident at all. Obviously, the momentum is with the Cavaliers. Right now, I feel like the Cavaliers are the better team. I think Boston has some doubt in their mind. Even if it was 2-2 in some other different, you know, fashion, I don't think Boston would have the doubt that they have right now. There are people that have carried them all year long and up to this point in the playoffs have not carried them now. I mean, Rozier has been, and I can't criticize them. I'm not going to go ahead and criticize them like they're like LeBron or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry. What these guys have done has been phenomenal. But just the last couple of games, I mean, we have to say it the way it is. They've not. For that reason alone, I don't feel confident. Though people, this is a pick-em game in Vegas. Now they say Boston's like a minus one, so it's right there. I think Cleveland wins this game because I don't think you could stop LeBron, what he's doing and what he's done the last two games. And I still think it's if he only shoots 12 times, that's good for Boston. You think that's bad, but overall, I think I got to go with Cleveland in game number 5.
Yeah, I just have to take Boston because they're home. I mean, I don't mean to dumb it down, but it's like a completely different team when they get to – everything changes. They've got to get back to what they did in game 1 and 2, which was run, run, run. Just run them right out of the gym. They've got to get Horford figured out offensively. They've got to get Tristan Thompson off of him. They've got to get Rozier untracked, and they've got to be careful about him being stuck on LeBron defensively with all the switching they're doing. And they've got to be careful not to get down early. I know one of the first two games they got down early at home and came back. But you can't be down 34-18 every first quarter and expect to get away with it.
It's not just about the Celtics being at home. It's also about the Cavs being on the road. They're 3-4 on the road in these playoffs. Their three-point shooting has been much worse on the road than at home. They are only 33% from three on the road. And if the three-point shot is what has doomed the Celtics, especially in Game 3, then if they can get them shooting poorly again on the road, then that's how they're going to win this game. The three-point line and how you defend the three-point line, and look, this is not rocket science. This is pretty much basketball in 2018 at this point. If you're going to win, you need to excel from the three-point line, and you need to defend the three-point line well. I remember talking about that with Tom Curl, Plattsburgh basketball coach this year. He said, the key to our season is how we defend the three-point line. And it's the same at the NBA level. If the Cavs hit between 4 and 9 threes, I think the Celtics have a good chance of winning. If they're pushing 10 to 18 threes, then I think the Cavs are going to win this game. It's all about the three-point line.
You know what it is I don't have confidence in the Cavaliers' other parts. So if I'm LeBron in the first quarter, I'm coming out guns a-blazing for myself, putting shots up. I can't worry about my other teammates getting involved in the game like I do when they're at home. And it's easier when the crowd gets behind you. You make a shot, next thing you know, you feel like you're, you know, Superman. I've got to go ahead. I'm going to, as long as I got a chance or a clear shot or a shot to go to the bucket, I'm going. I'm not going to worry about getting the rest of my teammates involved because you can't afford to go down double digits in the first, because everybody who goes down double digits in the first doesn't seem like they catch up. I can't do that if I'm LeBron.
It's going to be interesting if the Celtics, number one, if they play the same kind of defense they did. You talk about leaving Terry Rozier on LeBron and if they do that, can they bait LeBron into playing how they want? I think that's really what this comes down to. Can they bait LeBron into doing what they want him to do? And what they'll say is, if Rozier is guarding LeBron, then you have a size advantage, a strength advantage, a height advantage, an experience advantage. You have every advantage you want. If you want to take him to the bucket every time and hit a bunch of two-pointers, then go ahead. Because you know what you're not doing when you're hitting twos? Is passing it out to Kyle Korver to hit threes. Mm-hmm. Look at what happened with Milwaukee. They dominated the game as far as total field goals made. But you know what they didn't do? Was hit threes. That's what decided that series, was Milwaukee's inability to hit threes. If LeBron's going to score 48 and they're all on twos, then I think that's a win for the Celtics.
So you're saying LeBron could do what he does, but just stop the other guys from ever getting the shots off. I mean, I agree, because all of a sudden in the games in Cleveland, you start. I mean, Tristan Thompson is guaranteed double-double only at home. He did almost nothing in Boston. It's like two different people. Kyle Korver, same thing. J.R. Smith had a pointless game, literally, in Boston, came back strong. So it's unbelievable to me the difference between home and away in the NBA, and I suspect it'll continue tonight.
Brady, real quick, give me game five numbers. Who wins game five? What the chances are that you win the series?
Yeah, game five winner of a best of seven when it's tied 2-2 wins 83% of the time.
Wow!
So this is as close to must win as you can get. When it's tied 2-2,
right.
The game five winner wins the series 83% of the time.
And I know you can't look this up on the fly, but I'm wondering how many times it's won when the visiting team comes in. You know what I mean? Do they still go on and win it? Or, excuse me, when if the home team, compared to the home team there.
That being said, pressure's all on the green tonight.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. No, because if they don't win today, I guarantee you there won't be a game seven. I promise you that. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
The NFL has a new national anthem policy. What do we make of it?
All right, we'll get to that next. We're off and running. You're in the huddle right here.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in. And the huddle when you drive home. And you can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. By the way, we are going to be in the Memorial Day Parade on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Essex.
Yep.
I'm thinking we should auction off somebody to drive the car for us while we just stand on top of the car or something like that. How about
and wave to our thousands of adoring fans?
Yeah, like a 10-year-old kid or something.
Throw candy. Well, you can't throw candy anymore, can you?
You can't throw candy?
No.
You have to give. We can hand out candy,
That was the fun, was whipping the candy at kids and stuff. It was fun years ago, but now
I buy the hardest candy I could find.
You guys are almost 60 years old, and you want to throw candy at 8-year-olds?
Remember people were yelling at me last year?
They don't care. They're bulletproof. They're eight.
The one guy booed you last year, and you loved it.
Booed you at the parade?
This time, I was thinking, if anybody boos me, I will drive the car right up to them. But then I'm afraid I'm going to hit somebody. I don't want to even get started there.
Gosh, what is wrong with you?
There you go. Yeah,
says the guy who says whip candy at 8-year-olds.
Yeah. Did you see me like being in the news on that? Radio talk show host gets too close to. All right, Brady, big changes monster changes in the NFL because of the anthem. What's going on there?
Yeah, NFL anthem protest was a major story of 2017. The league today trying to make it not a story in 2018. So, in Atlanta today, the NFL owners have unanimously approved a new national anthem policy that requires players to stand for the anthem if they are on the field during the performance, but does give them the option to remain in the locker room if they prefer. Furthermore, the league can fine individual teams for having people outside on the sideline that kneel. Teams can also take their own punishment as well.
So there will be some financial punishment toward the person that kneels.
No, towards the team.
You said the team can take
The team can choose to punish a player or personnel. It's not just players. It could be a trainer, anybody.
Right.
Or they could say no. The Jets have already said if we have a player that comes out and kneels, we will not punish that person.
I felt if they really, really wanted to put an end to this, and this is about as close as you can get, except for the fact that maybe the 15-yard penalty they discussed, really would have really put an end to that. I don't think anybody was going to protest during the Super Bowl playoffs, or all of a sudden that's going to take a back seat. I kind of like the policy. You know, I remember when all this started, I tweeted out, I'll never forget this, I said maybe it's time that we got rid of the national anthem before sporting events. And I got a backlash, 90% against me. And it's one of the most harshest stuff I got back on Twitter in a long, long time.
And that's saying something for
you. It is. And not just people trying to be jerks, saying, you're this. I mean, people really heated. And not even so much me for making the suggestion, just the fact, because it's got to this point because of Colin Kaepernick. So I felt that was going to be our next option, was to go ahead and get rid of that. So I feel like this is a pretty good compromise, though I get the feeling that somebody's going to go ahead and still make it a issue to be seen out there.
For me, this just feels like the NFL just bailing out. I mean, it's just basically Roger Goodell saying, okay, owners, okay, team front offices, okay, players, it's not in our hands anymore. You be the enforcer.
It's still in the league.
Really? It just where is it coming from the NFL to cause the fines? It sounds like they're handing it down to the teams.
The league will fine the teams, and then the teams can fine the individuals if they choose.
All right.
So
all right.
And if you keep fining me, I may not want you on my team anymore because of your conduct. How about that?
What do you mean? If you're the player?
If I'm the team owner.
Okay.
And you're the player,
Brady.
Oh,
I see.
And I have to keep paying a fine because of you 16 times plus the playoffs.
Yeah.
I may not want you on my team anymore.
This is all about optics. And this is all about optics. And that's what's unfortunate about it. We are all in agreement. We talked a lot about this last year. None of us like the idea of kneeling. But besides the point, the NFL is saying, sure, you can protest the anthem, but you have to do it in the locker room. Well, that ceases to be a protest. The NFL is saying, look, it's all about how the league is perceived. That's all the NFL cares about, and nothing really is getting done on this, right, as far as I'm concerned.
No, why does that take away the protest? If you have how many
nobody
people
sees it.
If you have how many people on the team?
1% of players kneeled last year.
If 65 people are on the team or whatever there is, and 64 out there, everybody but Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, 63 are out there, everybody but two. You don't think that's going to make a statement? What do you think we're going to talk about the next day?
Less than 1% of 1,700 players were on active rosters last year. Less than 1% of them kneeled.
No, I understand that, but my point is the ones that don't show up on the field, we're still going to notice. It's not going to take away from the protest. We will still say, where's Tom Brady? Where's Colin Kaepernick?
There's also
Ben Roethlisberger or
there's
whoever.
Also people not out there because of things like getting work with the trainer. Right. And some people you won't know exactly why they're not out there.
Tape or whatever, a tape job. But, I mean, that brings up back the point that Brady made about the optics. If you're sitting in the locker room, how is it? It's like if a tree falls in the forest, nobody's around sort of situation. It's like protesters. You know what protesters, they stand in front of the state house every day. You know what they want? They want the media. That's all they care about. If the media doesn't show up, then there's no point in protesting.
The media will be there. They'll make note that, why weren't you out there? And then after the game, they'll say, we noticed you weren't out there for the anthem. Were you getting work or were you making a statement? That will be their platform.
And the other thing to think about too is I think people are passionate. They're so passionate that they're willing to take all of this ridicule and everything else, all the crap that goes along with it for these players that kneel, that they're not going to care about a fine. All they care about is getting their point across and publicizing their cause.
Right, but the team being fined is where Arnie says that you might have an issue. The owners could take exception if you're going to be a player that is going to continuously lose the owner money.
But what if you are a player, say Odell Beckham Jr. does it? What are you going to do about that after the fourth time? You going to bench him? I mean, that's why I'm saying there's a slippery slope here. What if you've got a superstar doing this?
Glenn in Moncton said, how can the Jets come out and say that this was decision was approved unanimously by the owners? Because that was true.
Well, except the 49ers.
The 49ers, right. The 49ers abstained.
They say they abstained, but it was reported that it was unanimous.
Well, that's unanimous, or that you're saying majority or?
Abstained means you didn't vote,
I believe. So that means unanimously because nobody was against it.
Yes.
Right. So that, I got to assume that's, if I'm wrong, then.
So Glenn and Moncton is saying, how can the Jets come out and say that they're not going to fine the individual players, I think, when this whole rule passed unanimously? Well, then
it becomes up to them. Yeah.
Right. It comes down to them. The other thing is that, and look, I've seen a lot of this on Twitter. A lot of people are saying this, so I'm reading it word for word. It was an African-American, I believe, newswoman who said this. She says that, the rule is stated that players, quote, shall stand and show respect for the flag and anthem. She goes, my issue with this is the following. It implies that those that kneeled weren't respecting the flag, which furthers the false idea that protests were about the flag in the first place. The protests were about injustice,
right,
not the flag.
Well, then you should pick another way to protest so we don't lose sight of exactly what you're trying to get across. That's like me saying, I want to protest injustice, so I'm going to put a swastika on my forehead.
Right.
You know, that's ridiculous. Absolutely asinine. If you want, that's me making the message being lost with me doing something stupid like that. If you're going to kneel, you're making it about the song and about the flag. If you want to go ahead and make it about injustice, there's another way to do it so we can focus on injustice. That's what I feel.
The league, I think, needs to come out and make a concerted effort now to highlight the work that they're doing off the field. They've got this players' coalition. There's players in a bunch of cities. Miami's done it. Philly's done it. Seattle's done it. And there are others. And Colin Kaepernick's given a bunch of money, I think over $10 million, if I'm not mistaken. this is a time where the league needs to come out and highlight that work and show that they are all in on trying to change things and trying to get rid of injustice, because I don't think this rule does a whole lot other than just try to push the problem back to the locker room so that fans don't see it.
I don't even know off the top of my head. I bet you if you Google NFL charities, there is a boatload of charities and inner city communities that they put together and help with programs. Oh, I think the NFL, and as a matter of fact, I'm sure all major professional sports teams do stuff like that.
Well, I'm just interested to see if what effect it has on some guys that are just determined to do it anyway. And after the fourth and fifth time, happening.
If it's that, let me ask you this. So, if they're so determined to get their message across, right, and they believe so strongly about it, okay?
Yeah, they'll pay the fine.
Okay, and let's say the fine, $50,000, whatever, doesn't make a difference. $50,000, $100,000, whatever the hell it is, okay? If they feel so strongly about it, how come they're not doing anything right now?
Mm-hmm.
You would be doing it round the clock, 24/7, especially on your own time, not during the time that you work. If I'm going to protest something, I'm not going to do it between 4 and 6 Monday through Friday because I got to be here at work. I'm not going to say, you know what, Brady, I'm taking the day off. I think I'm going to use a sick day and then go out and protest. I'll probably do it before I have to come to work, after I get off from work, or on a weekend. Where are these guys that feel so strongly about it? Where are you right now during the off season before the OTAs happen on your own time? Don't do it on work time.
Maybe they are. I mean, we don't know.
Oh, we would know,
Rich. But the reason that they're doing it when they're doing it is because there's 8,000 cameras right there in their face. That's their opportunity.
That's fair for you to say that.
Totally fair.
People like Malcolm Jenkins are working tirelessly on community efforts. The Dolphins were hosting community forums with local police officers. Doug Baldwin was meeting with Washington legislature.
To protest? Why aren't they protesting at the White House or the state capitol? You know, like they protest taking a knee before the anthem. You know what? You saw that Kawhi Leonard was at the Dodger game, right? You feel so strongly about it. Why don't you get all your teammates from your NFL team that feel like you do, go to the local baseball game and take a knee at the baseball game? What do you think will happen there? That would get, oh my goodness, what do you think we would be talking about if the Pittsburgh Steelers, say, went to the Pirates game and they all took a knee during the anthem? Oh my goodness, you want press now? You want press? How much press do you want there, big boy? Because you would get tons of it. So why aren't they doing stuff like that?
I don't know.
Yeah, you really want people's attention. There's a lot of ways to do it other than just taking a knee for the anthem during your own games. There's tons of stuff you could be doing right now.
Yeah, but understand, too, I think the original conversation was about the NFL's new rule. I don't think the NFL's new rule accomplishes anything other than just trying to get this issue out of the public light, and that is what the NFL wants. The NFL optically just cares that the average fan is no longer put off, and if you put this issue in the locker room, then there's less of a chance for that.
I'm going to just read two texts on the Town Fair Tire text line. Zach and Bristol, exact opposites. Zach and Bristol, Arnie, I agree. If they want to protest, do it in a way that doesn't affect the integrity of our flag and anthem. Joe in Conderoga, Arnie sounds uneducated and ignorant. Just because the media isn't all over things, these players are doing, I guess, stuff. Or
good things in the community, or at least bringing the discussion up is what they're doing. I mean, tell me Kaepernick, as much as we all want to dislike him because of what he started, isn't doing a lot in the community. He's taking it further. He isn't just taking a knee and saying, well, let's hope for the best.
I give him that. He did put $10 million where he did. I totally agree with you that. Brady, we have a lot to get to. I'm sure we'll get a lot on that. You have it on the webpage, our Facebook page, if people want to go ahead and make comments on that also.
It will be when our show is over.
Okay, so you can go there. What's coming up next?
Doug Kazarian, ESPN Sports Center anchor. We'll talk with him.
All right, that's next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Rich, Arnie, and Brady are back, and they're already starting to argue. The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. We move along. We got to go right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line, guys. Joining us now, ESPN Sports Center anchor, host of College Game Day on ESPN Radio, and, of course, Behind the Bets podcast, it's Doug Kazarian. How you doing, Doug?
Doing all right, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot for stopping by. You're a Vegas guy. You worked in Vegas for, like, 7 years. You do a lot of gambling stuff. You cover a little bit of the Golden Knights. Tell us, first of all, what did you think about the Golden Knights and that whole story? Unbelievable, huh?
Just a remarkable story. And really, as we all know, there's two components to it. One is the actual hockey, which is fascinating. And you know what's interesting? And I was talking about with some of our guys last night. If you had to redo the extension draft last year, most teams, like all but like one of the teams, would not have done it the same way. So, like, maybe Carlson not exposed on the expansion draft. But it's not like the Penguins hang on to Fleury. And all the others were contract reasons that even the Golden Knights expected to flip at the deadline for younger players, but then they found themselves in first place. So it is truly remarkable. It wasn't even like a bunch of botch decisions by other front offices. It was just a bunch of guys coming together, and it's us against the world. Kind of we're discarded, we're dismissed, we're cast away. I think Fleury started a group text saying we're the Vegas Misfits, and they all sort of rallied around it. It kind of reminded me of the movie Major League, where they all were against the owner and, why not us kind of thing.
And, Doug, of course, you're going to get the bandwagon jumpers. And us here in Original Six country up here in the Northeast, you know, we're like, oh, they can't win the Stanley Cup. They've got to suffer a little bit. But really, hadn't they sold like 10,000 season tickets before the arena was even built?
Absolutely. Look, I lived there, like you said, for 7 years. This is a big sports town. And yes, it's overshadowed by the sports betting, and I know we'll get into that. But don't forget, I mean, it takes a sports fan to bet on sports. So it's a big sports town, and now it's sort of a suburb of L.A., so it's a big Laker town, and, you know, a lot of Dodgers and Giants fans from California. But, you know, Vegas is interesting. They feel dismissed, and no one really appreciates how much this is an actual city. There's nearly 2 million people that live there. They have churches. They have Little League. They have grocery stores. It's not just all debauchery and escape from reality for a weekend like everyone perceives it. And getting a pro team validated its existence into like the normal world of saying, yeah, it's a normal city. It just really just responded well. And they've sold out season tickets for 3 years.
Doug, again, as you said, we'll talk about the gambling, so let's get to it now. A big Supreme Court ruling last week allowing the states the opportunity to legalize sports betting. What are your thoughts overall?
Well, it's kind of 50-50. 50% is my cautious optimism all along because we anticipated a favorable ruling, so it was a lot of relief in that regard. And then the other half was like, hallelujah, because I've just been a big proponent of it. I think it has the stigma and this taboo label that's just so stupid for so long. And finally, this is sort of getting acceptance as well. And look, we have vices in this country. We have alcohol. We have cigarettes. But we also have other forms of it, whether it be food or the stock market and other things along those lines. It's like the only country that doesn't allow it. It's nonsense. There's such a hypocritical double standard. We go to take the NFL to London, and there's betting inside Wembley Stadium. We're going to have a pro team in Vegas where fans are going to be able to bet on the game in the arena. So why do we have this federal ban that the Supreme Court, all 9 judges had an issue with the legal aspect of things? Yeah, the vote was only 6-3 or 7-2, but all 9 judges had an issue with how this federal ban was constructed from the legality standpoint. And finally, they said, this is stupid. We'll let states figure it out by themselves and let adults, be treated like adults.
All right, Doug, you were in Vegas 7 years. You got to have a good gambling story. I lived in Vegas like a year, and you feel like you got inside sources. Somebody told me to bet Sergey Bruguera in the French Open at 22-1, and I won. Had $100. I thought I was the richest guy in the world. You have any good gambling stories, at least that you want to admit to?
Well, I mean, come on. You do the math. Everyone has a good story if they go there one weekend, and I was there 350 weekends. So you do the math, but a lot of fun stuff and a lot of interesting big swings, let's call it, positive and negative.
Hey, Doug, let me ask you this. We think we know the impact of betting at the professional level, but what about at the college level? Does this ruling make point-shaving scandals more likely because more people are invested, or does it make it less likely because it's more heavily regulated so we can see if there's weird trends going on?
Exactly. Bingo. Less likely because... Wow. Look, think about it, guys. They didn't invent this vice a week and a half ago, right? They didn't say, hey, well, there's a crazy idea. Let's put let's put point spreads on games. It's like this stuff's been going on forever. And depending on which estimate you read, as high as $400 billion, that's B as in boy, is bet illegally through offshore books or local bookies. And why do we have this? And that's just in the United States, by the way. Why are we allowing this? Let's regulate it. And Vegas books are on the side of clean play, no funny business. So you get more eyeballs, more monitoring. Like, it's a win-win. Yeah, the players are going to be just as susceptible to schemes and all that, but I just can't see how it's gotten worse. I really don't. Maybe it's going to be more part of our daily vernacular, and maybe it's going to be more prevalent, I guess, but I just don't see it that way. I mean, I could be wrong. I just don't see it that way.
Doug, how does this work in the arenas and the stadiums? I mean, you're going to have kiosks with long lines. How is this going to play out?
Well, that's the million-dollar question across all these topics, right? And anyone who says they know exactly what's going to happen is lying. So we're going to have it figured out eventually. But, yeah, I think everything, personally, I think it's going to be technology. So I think the kiosk and the betting windows, like maybe at the horse track, will probably exist, at least initially. But the smaller one is to go online and have your app and be able to access it that way.
Yeah, well, people may be lying about if they know what's going to happen. But you're going to tell me who's going to win the Celtic game tonight because you know what's going to happen with that, don't you?
Of course. I got my crystal ball out and everything. No, I lean Celtics. I think it's tough to win three straight games when you have against a team that's got better defense and better coach. So it's tough to win three straight. And Boston, obviously, undefeated at home this postseason. I lean Boston minus the one.
Doug Kazarian, ESPN Sports Center anchor, host of College Game Day on ESPN Radio and the Behind the Bets podcast. I'm going back to one gambling question. What does this do to the mobile betting industry that's already out there? Like, is my bookie technically been illegal all this time? Does this crush my bookie? What happens to those kind of things?
So there's going to be some substitution effect, no doubt. So some people who bet with a bookie or offshore are going to start betting regular, with the regulations and authorities and keep it above board. So there's going to be definitely an underground world that continues along their merry way until the federal authorities really crack down, and we'll see what happens there. But convenience is the key, and if you can make it convenient and regulate it and then start putting the other guys out of business, then I think that's going to be the game plan moving forward in the big picture.
All right,
Doug, as a SportsCenter anchor, how do you continue to evolve as the shows change?
I'm sorry, say that again, please?
I said, as a SportsCenter anchor, how do you continue to evolve as the shows change?
Well, that's an interesting question. I might be I've been a sliding scale all throughout my career, but the Vegas background has obviously helped me. You mentioned the Behind the Bets podcast. And so definitely leading the forefront of our a lot of our sports betting coverage. I've been writing articles for .com, hosting the podcast, and doing radio hits such as this one. So I think that's going to become more my specialty moving forward.
Wow. Well, Doug, I'm a good-looking guy also. I love to do SportsCenter. So just go ahead and ring me up.
Whatever.
55 years old. I'm the demographic you're looking for, and I'm bald. So I'm sure I'll fit right in there, Doug.
You're warming up in the bullpen. We'll send the bullpen card for you.
I love that. Doug, hey, it's a pleasure, man. We'll have to do it again. Thanks a lot for stopping by.
You got it. My pleasure. Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Doug.
Take care. Doug Kazarian, everybody. ESPN SportsCenter anchor.
Keep trying, Arnie.
Wow.
Keep trying.
I would like to be a SportsCenter anchor, but I don't know if they would go with my shtick. I think I'd be a little too much over the top.
You keep going to Orange Theory, yeah. And you'll be ripped and ready to go.
Can you read highlights? Do you have a catchphrase?
I can't read a teleprompter.
Well, then you're like Ron Burgundy in Anchorman.
It is. I'm not a teleprompter guy. I have to have the script in front of me.
Yeah, but now you've got your $9 million glasses. Yeah. You might be able to actually see it.
I know. I'm a little nervous because I'm always afraid that the teleprompter will move too fast. So I'll be going, hi, everyone. My name's Artie Spaniard. I go, all of a sudden, I can't, and if it goes
slow
too fast,
slow
down, go back. I didn't get that. Yeah. Can you go back a little bit? I would be horrified.
I often wonder why that doesn't happen.
I did.
Often.
Exactly.
I only did like 4 newscasts ever with a teleprompter in college, and then I went right to just doing live sports only. I didn't even did you do radio in college?
Like, no, didn't do any radio.
You did a lot of radio.
That's all I did.
Yeah.
Did you do exclusively talk shows, or did you do play-by-play of your college's games, what?
I did Linden State basketball, Linden Institute sports, high school, and a lot of rock and roll DJing.
Yeah?
And, yeah, it was
fun. First time I did radio was on national radio.
Really?
Yes, that was my first. First time. National
radio.
How
does that
work?
You had no demo tape. How did you
I had
get
nothing.
To do that?
No, there was a brand new network in Las Vegas, out of all places, and I kept bugging this guy. I'm like, come on, man, let me do a show. He's like, you know, he's, where have you done a show? Like, I've never done a show. And he's like, go to Arkansas and call me in like 3 years. But anyway, he's like, you know, I like you anyway. Keep calling me back. And I kept calling him, but he had nothing. And then just one day out of the blue, as I'm sitting around doing nothing, right before Christmas, he calls me up because you still want to do two shows? Yeah, he goes, we'll give you midnight to 6 a.m. Christmas Eve and Christmas, New Year's Eve and New Year's.
I remember those days.
Drove into Vegas.
We got a shift for you on Christmas morning.
And it was sport. It was sports.
Yeah, it was a network. And I went in and did the shift. I went to thank him the next day because he never even showed up to see who the hell I was. If I had headphones, I didn't know what I was doing. And two guys come out yelling, blank you, and quit. One of them might have been Tim Neverett. I won't say that. And,
really?
Yes. And
they were mad they didn't get the opportunity that
they just didn't. They were going on the bigger and better things.
Oh, okay.
And the guy comes out and goes, who the hell are you? I go, whoa. I just want to say thank you. My name's Arnie. You let me do the Christmas Eve, Christmas, New Year's stuff. Thanks. I just want to thank you. Now I got a tape. I can get a job because you want to thank me. You could start today.
Wow.
And they gave me like noon to three, and that was how I got into this damn business.
That Red Sox play-by-play guy? He sounds like such a nice guy.
Well,
on
he
the
might
radio.
Have been dropping the FU bomb, might have been the other guy, but both of them quit. At the same time. So
I
opened it up.
I only got into this business because I wanted to be a college baseball coach, and I wanted to move back to Albany to coach junior college baseball, and it paid $1,500 a year.
Oh, jeez.
$1,500 a year.
That's about right.
More in gas to get to the stadium than money taken in. So I emailed every TV, radio, newspaper place in the Albany area, and the only place that got back to me even was the radio place. I said, sure, you can come in from 6 to 10 a.m. and press one button during Mike and Mike in the morning.
Yeah, that was my first job. Yeah. It was overnight board operator for the Larry King Show on WTSL in Hanover, New Hampshire. Yeah. So from midnight to 6, once an hour, I would push the button and say the weather for 30 seconds.
So you had to you got to talk away.
Yes, I was terrified. But this was from midnight to 6, the Larry King Radio Show on the Mutual Broadcasting System.
What a glamorous job.
3:05, quick, say the weather.
Glamorous job.
Yeah, my only job was press the button and make sure that Mike and Mike stays on the air. That was the only job I had.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Now we're major stars in a huge, massive market.
Oh, yes, major stars.
Millions.
All right, I got a great story for you as we finish off hour number one. What would you pay $50,000 for? One guy pays $50,000. I'll tell you what he did with that. That's coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3. Your
heartbeat quickens. Your eyes widen. The sky opens up and showers you in a million heart-shaped raindrops. You're in love with the perfect song. With Spotify, the more you listen, the better we get at helping you discover songs you love. So, whether it's the next breakout star or that song you dance to at prom, we'll help you find it and fall in love all over again. Download the free app today. Love what you love. Free on Spotify.
Arnie injured himself playing basketball.
Ouch!
Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. You're going to love this story. You know, Tiger Woods obviously does a lot for charity. Well, a unnamed bidder, and to help raise money for charity, this year's Tiger Jam auction on Saturday night, an unnamed bidder bid $50,000 for the opportunity just to caddy for Tiger Woods at the Hero World Challenge Pro-Am later this fall. So that was the winning bid, $50,000.
Well, you know, good for him. Good for him because that's, you know, he has a chance to make a lot of money simply by if you're somebody that's so famous that you could just show up at something and raise a ton of money for whatever great cause happens to be.
You would think you'd get more than that. Brady, you would pay $50,000 to pitch like an inning of AAA baseball or something like that, would you not, if you had the money?
$50,000.
No, I would not pay for that.
I'd
rather meet somebody. Lunch with Ken Griffey Jr., that kind of thing.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I would. If I'm going to pay $50,000, I got to be involved somehow.
Yeah, but you know what if he goes out and throws a third of an inning, gives up 7 runs?
Yeah, God, so what?
Of course,
though,
that would ever happen.
That's what you're paying. That's what you're paying the $50,000 for.
You, Arnie, you have an impression like you like. Forget that I would have fielders. So yes, they might hit the ball hard, but they're not all going over the wall.
No. That's why. See, I don't want to have lunch with anybody and just sit down and be. Unless it's like Warren Buffett or something, that's going to make me tons of money.
Right.
I mean,
would he pay?
Yeah, I want to play. I want to get out there, man. I want to. even if I'm going to make a fool out of myself.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so yeah, that's the key.
Yeah. I mean, even if I'm horrible. I played baseball against the Colorado Silver Bullets, the all-girls hardball team.
Yeah, I bet the pitcher throws about 190 miles an hour.
And they threw like 70. I struck out on four pitches. And the first
pitch was a ball?
Yeah, and then I swung and missed in the next three.
At least you swung.
And I played right field and thinking that nobody was going to hit it to me, and somebody hit it to me, and I couldn't get to it. It rolled all the way to the wall, and then was had inside the park home run.
And you had to pay for that? Or you were...
No, they just put me on the team because I did radio there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... And that's, I mean, look, it's a lot of fun. I don't know if I'd pay the $50,000 to do that one, though.
Right up there with that wiffle ball game last year on the first pitch that was thrown in Winooski over at Landry Park.
I was
went off of my hand and over the fence for a home run.
I know you jacked up my ERA.
I was so mad at you then.
Yeah, because it's very important that we win those games, right?
It is, as a matter of fact.
It was, and I was so mad at you that day. I'm like, what are you doing? I want to win, and you're like out there like a clown.
It's hard to have a beer in one hand and catch a line drive with the
other. Yeah, but you don't let it go off your face over the wall.
Who cares?
I did. I was mad at you that day.
That's preposterous.
At the Travis Roy tournament this year, we're going to be good. We're going to get a good team.
Yeah. We got a – well, I outbatted both of you, I think.
So. No, you didn't.
I'm going to be the scoreboard operator for that one.
Yeah. We have to put that on Facebook Live, that whole thing there. All right, hour one in the books. Crazy second hour. Buster only going to join us to start things off. Brady's going to have a SportsCenter update. Stick around for all that. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
You know you have 30 seconds left.
Yeah, but you always get mad if you go late, especially for Buster only. And you got mad that we went late to Doug Kazarian. So I'm like,
I did not get mad for that.
Yes, you did.
Oh, getting into Doug Kazarian.
Yeah.
Well, when we tell the guy we're going to call him at 4:35, then it's 4:39.
Okay, so that's why I went 30 seconds. I know you don't want to keep Buster waiting.
By the way, you haven't mentioned that we're also going to be doing the Ultimate Fenway Fan Contest next hour. So be listening for the cue to call.
Why don't you tell people that?
Now! Buster Olney's next.
There you go.
The local slant on all things sports.
We know that everybody's going to be gunning for us.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN, mere moments away from Buster Olney. Rich, I feel I kind of get left out. I don't get to play basketball tonight. I can't wait for this knee to get better. I'm
sure all your opponents can't wait for your knee to get better, too.
I'm really going to come out with a vengeance, too. I may take a day off just to go play basketball down at Pomeroy Park.
Another day off. Go there. You'll see some good ball there.
Oh, no. But trust me, they're not that good. Why don't we do the show live from Pomeroy Park on a Friday? You guys do the show, and I'll do nothing but play basketball.
Okay, can we check the forecast before we agree?
Yeah, it's got to be like the most hottest, steamiest day.
Right. Because once you pass out trying to drive to the hoop.
I went to the University of Arizona. What are you talking about? I'm not passing out over nothing.
Tucson's a little toasty this time of year.
Yeah, there's, believe me, this is nothing compared to Tucson. So, yeah, I've been
taking it's a dry heat.
I just hate that everybody's playing ball now all of a sudden. All of a sudden, Brady decides he wants to play ball. And when I'm hurt. And,
well, now that the
go.
Defensive stalwart is out of the picture, he feels like he can run up some points.
People just,
I mean, with you and your knee.
I'm bummed, man. My knee is swollen. Too.
Man, neck hurts, and I can't move. I mean, the three of us are just a mess. Unit in here.
I did really gain 9 pounds, too, ever since I haven't been able to go to Orange Theory Fitness. What the hell?
Well, get back soon.
Yeah.
I can tell you've gained it all back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, I gained 10 pounds in like 4 days. That's like a record. Yeah,
I'll have you know Buster's on my side, and Buster's on my side about the Mariners. Did you see they had two more injuries last night?
Haniger is gone, I guess.
Haniger and Segura. Their entire team is injured.
Well, let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, he is our MLB insider. It's Buster Olney. How you doing, Buster?
Doing great, except annoyed with you because you are making fun of Brady, and that's just me. I mean, he's rooting for a team that is the most luckless team in baseball, and you're picking on him, and I don't like it.
Yeah, but it's so much fun, Buster. I mean,
he's a Mets fan.
And I'm a Met fan. I mean, look, I'm a Met fan, a New York Knicks fan, so I'm used to it. But Brady should have been used to it by now.
Well, you know, call one of those animal preservation societies because you guys are beating a dead horse when you're picking on the Mariners. My God, it's been 17 years. Yes, we know they're terrible every year. You can't, Brady. Let's go. Ease up on Brady a little bit.
I totally agree, Buster. Let's go to the Red Sox first and foremost.
No,
though.
Let's talk about how hopeless the Mariners are. No, just kidding. Okay.
You know, and they had such hope this year, and now they're all gone.
They're like 9 games over .500. Yeah. They're 2 games out of first place in the West. West, and they're holding on to a wild card spot.
Maybe
right
they'll
now,
be
Rich.
Like the Celtics.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So.
Everybody gets
funny.
Hurt.
I was watching the Astros broadcast today, and they were talking about that. Like, look at the run differential. Like, the Astros are far and away. The numbers make no sense that the Mariners would be that close. So, all kidding aside, you got to give credit to them for hanging in there through all these problems they're having.
Buster, I enjoyed your podcast yesterday with Alex Cora,
yeah.
Red Sox manager. We played back a bunch of the clips yesterday. What was your biggest takeaway from that interview?
That Alex, and you know, as I said to him when we started, it's hard for me now to be anything but biased when we talk about Alex and about Aaron Boone because I worked with them and they're both friends. Look, you got a sense in listening to that about how his personality plays and how people respond to it. And he's so sincere and he's so genuine and he clearly is on the side of the players and the players get that. And, you know, the way he connects with players, Mookie Betts, you know, talking to him about being aggressive early in the count, coming out swinging right from the get-go, and the whole thing, which I hadn't heard any place, about Devers and trying to convince him to, you know, to be more patient at the plate and understanding players and how they think. You know, look, Rafael Devers is not one of the guys making $20 million, but I've heard this from a lot of people. You know, you could have a player who's making an incredible amount of money, but if you put a gift certificate in front of him, yeah, baby. Like, they're fired up about that. And that's, you know, that's how players think. That's how they, you know, that's how it really gets their attention. And clearly, and I knew that when I asked him the follow-up question, okay, when Devers took a walk for the first time, how long did it make before he made eye contact with you? And he said, immediately.
Hey, Buster, one follow-up on that. You asked him the question, what is the part of the job you love that you didn't know you would love? And his answer was, the part before the game where I get to meet and interact with everybody. And I just, is it typical that the manager, like, is that a new phenomenon, the manager talking with these guys 4, 5, 6 hours before the game? Like, I have a picture of managers just in their office until game time starts. How new is that?
I don't think that part's new, but I think it's increasingly becoming part of the job. And certainly, let's face it, I mean, there were managers, Billy Martin, who wouldn't give a whit what the players are thinking. He's the old-fashioned field general. That guy's out. Now, I will tell you, like, I was always fascinated by Jim Leland in all the years that he managed. He would sort of swing through the clubhouse, and he would take note of what was going on. He'd see which players were talking to which reporters, and he'd have a joke for everybody. But I thought it was him sort of doing a flyover, right, and monitoring the clubhouse. And I think a lot of guys do that in this day and age. But there certainly are more hands-on. I mean, Aaron Boone is constantly talking with players. I asked Dylan Betances in spring training about, hey, what's Aaron like? And he talked about how they talked literally a dozen times during the offseason. Recently, I asked, who was it, Steven Souza Jr. of the Diamondbacks about Torey Lovullo, who's part of this new group of managers. And he told me that when he was on minor league rehab, you know, and typically players who do that go away and no one really talks to them, he said Torey was calling him every other day. How you doing? What can we do to help you? How you feeling? What kind of progress are you making? And he really appreciated the hands-on approach that Torey has.
And Buster, you asked this question about J.D. Martinez, who's about as hot as a baseball player can be right now. But is there ever a fear of, you know, too much information or too much effort?
There definitely is that. And I will tell you that that in recent years it's been interesting to me, a phenomenon is beginning to take place where rather than have the grind and take batting practice every day and work at it and put in extra work, you know, the John Gruden theory of you have to be in your office at 3:45 in the morning because other people are putting in more time, baseball's generally going the other way. Joe Maddon telling his players more and more with the Cubs, look, if you don't feel like taking batting practice today, then give your body a rest. You know, Buster Posey, you know, has really worked on preserving his body, and his hitting coach, Hensley Mullins, told me that on a given day, he'll take only 10 to 15 swings in batting practice and then say that's it. J.D. Martinez is on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. You know, A.J. Pollock, the Diamondbacks center fielder, told me a story, and I related this on the podcast when I talked to Alex yesterday, how when J.D. was with the Diamondbacks, A.J. found out that J.D. was taking batting practice 45 minutes away, so he said, look, just come over to my house. I've got an indoor cage. And so here comes J.D. Martinez, 11 o'clock in the morning, 11:30 in the morning, taking batting practice before a night game. And A.J. Estimated that in a 10-game homestand, he would do this 4 days a week. And then he would go to the park, and then he would take some swings in a cage, and then he would take regular batting practice, and then he would play. And A.J. said to me, look, you know, there might be some players where that would be a concern. He said, not with J.D. because of the way that he works through his mechanics. He doesn't think that that's going to be an issue. I will be interested to see if there are any adjustments from J.D. As time goes along, because as I say, the sport's kind of moving the other direction.
All right. Well, speaking about moving in the other direction, then I expect Craig Kimbrell to get the start for the Red Sox because I guess relievers are now starters now, right, for one inning, huh?
Well, Sergio Romo did that. Yeah, and I neglected to look this up. I was asked by somebody, you know, is this the first time that this happened? No, it actually, I think John McGraw did it for the New York Giants in a World Series game at some point, where you start a reliever, you get a platoon advantage, and let's face it, if there's one team you want a platoon advantage against, it's the Angels because they're so right-handed. You know, they got Ian Kinsler and Mike Trout and Justin Upton, and so that's what they did. And as a baseball nerd, I think it's kind of cool. As a fan of the sport, I think it's horrible, and I hope that that the practice stops, because as time goes on and we have this conversation about how to fix baseball, I've absolutely come to the conclusion you have to start with the number of relievers that are used. You have to get back to the point where the starting pitchers are really important, and you can't have these parade of relievers coming in.
Buster, wow. We talked about this with Tom Caron yesterday of Nesson. We talked about the Ruzny Castillo situation, the outfielder from Cuba who the Red Sox have stashed in AAA. He's there because of the money that he makes, and it's part of the old collective bargaining agreement. Is there anything that can be done? I feel bad for this guy who's just stuck in purgatory right now.
Yeah, and that would require some sort of a side agreement between the players and Major League Baseball, Player Association, Major League Baseball. You guys remembered a similar thing happened with Juan Cruz. He was a reliever in the player comp system. He was regarded as like a superstar in terms of compensation. No one thought Juan Cruz was a superstar, so they wound up negotiating something, and you would love for something like that to happen. He absolutely stuck in purgatory. We saw in recent years the same thing happened with Alan Craig, where he was worth more to the Red Sox in the minor leagues than he was playing in the big leagues because of the luxury tax things. But here's the problem. Right now, the relationship between the union and Major League Baseball is easily the worst it's been in almost two decades. Mm. And if conversations like that could be had, or might be fruitful, they're not being done because of how bad it is right now.
Buster, I got to ask you. I saw Lenny Dykstra's in trouble again today. Yeah. I don't know if you've had a chance to get to know him at all, but he's really just been having all kinds of problems, a former Mets and Phillies star. I guess today he was charged with making terrorist threats, a number of drug offenses. He had cocaine and ecstasy, pulled a gun on an Uber driver. I mean, have you had a chance to meet him over the years?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And had him on a podcast last year, and doing that interview, it felt like you had a tiger by the tail. Right, where you ask a question, and I mean, he's always been a wild man. You know, since the first days he played in the big leagues, I remember, and the idea that he might be involved in some pharmaceutical, I don't think that that's a surprising development.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never forget. I was a young reporter covering the Padres, and I walked over to the Phillies clubhouse. And it was waiting for him and waiting for him and waiting for him. Game starting at 1 o'clock in San Diego, and he rolls in at noon. And I walked up to him. I had been, you know, hoping that he'd come in. And I walked up to him, and I felt like I was like had taken a big flashlight and flashed in his eyes in the dark.
Oh.
I mean, that's how he looked at me, like, really, kid? You're going to come at me this early with questions like that on a Sunday morning? And so I went over to back to the Padres clubhouse. I said, man, I saw Lenny Dykstra. It looked like he was in rough shape. Looked like he'd been out all night. He's not going to be a factor today. An hour later, he leads off and hits a 420-foot home run and bounces around the bases like he had been rejuvenated. And I'll just leave it at that.
I love it. Hey, Buster, what's going on with some of these big bats out there? Goldschmidt batting, what, like 200? Bryce Harper, 238? What's going on with some of these guys?
Well, different circumstances in the different cases. I think with Bryce Harper, he clearly got frustrated with the idea that he wasn't being pitched to and just decided he was going to swing at everything, and he expanded his zone. And he's done more damage lately, but it's probably would behoove him to take walks if they're going to throw pitches out of the zone. And in Paul Goldschmidt's case, I think he is sort of at the forefront of maybe a trend we're seeing in baseball. With all these relievers being used and they're all throwing harder than ever, I gave you that stat a couple weeks ago about the pitches at 98-plus have more than tripled in 4 years. Paul Goldschmidt, and this was going into Sunday's game, had seen 77 pitches of 96 miles per hour plus and had no hits.
Wow.
Okay? And it, so I think it's clear that some of the older players, and Paul Goldschmidt is 30 years old, have struggled with baseball as you're seeing more of these high-velocity relievers come into the game. It's like the game is speeding up and some of the older players are being left behind.
Buster Olney, baseball insider from ESPN, with us every week at this time on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go to the Yankees. What happens when everyone gets healthy? It's hard to believe they're not all healthy, but Greg Bird is going to be back soon, Tommy Canely, the reliever. What happens with the Yankees' invariable roster crunch?
Their dominant position in the trade market gets even better.
Yeah.
Because they are going to be at the front of the line. Whatever team they talk to, and it hasn't fully evolved about which teams will be sellers, which teams will be buyers, and who will be out on the market. But the Yankees will be absolutely sitting there with flush with prospects, flush with available players, flush with financial flexibility, which is why that teams like the Red Sox will be at an incredible disadvantage against New York as we get close to that deadline. You know, Brandon Drury, they traded for in spring training, and it looks like now they could potentially put him out in the marketplace. Neil Walker has been playing better of late. He might have to move back into more of a support role because they really do believe that Greg Bird, and we saw this late in last season, is a high-impact player, especially in Yankee Stadium with that left-handed swing. So they're going to be, they're already absolutely stacked, and they're going to be in an even better position. I will tell you that in the last few weeks, man, when you look at the baseball landscape, the Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros, whatever order you want to put them in, they are the three best teams in baseball, and then there's a huge gap between those three teams and the rest of the field. It's amazing.
All right, Buster, I got to ask you this. You want me to believe that someone's throwing 105-mile-an-hour fastball, Jordan Hicks, really? Come on. Do I have to really believe that, or what? Is that true?
Yes, it's 100%
wow,
true.
Wow, really?
Yes, it's done with radar, and it's not like, back in the day, I will tell you, that, when I first started covering baseball, you had the, some stadiums had the hot radar guns where they'd go 4 or 5 miles per hour. Some are lower. When I covered the Yankees and Hideki Arabu pitched at Shea Stadium, Bobby Valentine knew how to get in his head, and so Arabu throws his first fastball of the day, and he could typically throw 95, 98, and the first fastball reading of the day was 86, okay? So you knew Bobby might have something behind that when that popped up on the board. In this day and age, that is not as nearly as much the case. So 100%,
wow.
Jordan Hicks throwing that hard. And if you don't believe me, just look at the response written on the faces of his teammates when he was pitching, where they're seeing him throw a fastball and they're all darting their heads toward the scoreboard because they're wondering how hard he's throwing. And the way that pitch, it's like wiffle ball at 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
Buster, we'll get you out of here on this. I have decided that Sonny Gray is the most fascinating case study in baseball to me. I'm reading everything you can read about this guy, and he just sounds like he tinkers with this, he tinkers with that. He's got his own personal catcher. So we talk about J.D. Martinez. It was relayed to me once as it was called paralysis by analysis, just overthinking constantly. And that's what tore me apart as a player. Can you think of a player that was just in their head so much that it kind of broke them? Because that's what I fear is happening with Sonny Gray.
I think it happens with a lot of players, quite frankly. I think it's, the other day I was having a conversation with Tony Kemp. It was actually a college teammate of Sonny Gray at Vanderbilt. And Tony Kemp told me that he has now built this habit where every off day he takes some time to sit and to look at a baseball and to remind himself, your job is really hard. You have to hit this thing going at 95 miles per hour. And is moving all over the place. That's really hard. And so, as Tony described that to me the other day, I said, "So you're telling yourself you got to forgive yourself a little bit." He goes, "Absolutely." And I would agree with you about Sonny. You know, I've known Sonny for a long time. He went to the same college as I did. And I remember hearing a story about Sonny. I might have told you guys last summer about how loose and free he was when he was in high school and college. He was funny, life of the party. At one point when he was being recruited by Tim Corbin, the Vanderbilt coach, during a high school play, and Sonny was the lead. I think it was High School Musical was the play. In the middle of the play, Tim looks down at his phone to check his emails, and a text pops up. It's from Sonny on the stage saying, "What are you looking at, meat? Watch the play." Okay, that's Sonny's personality. And now when you watch him pitch, it's like he picks around the edges, he picks around the edges, he picks around the edges, needs the personal catcher. I would agree with you. I think maybe Sonny needs to spend some time with Tony Kemp looking at a baseball saying, "You know what? This sport is hard, and forgive yourself."
Oh, I love it. I love that story. Buster, always a pleasure, my friend. We certainly will do it again next week. Have a great week, and we'll catch up to you next time.
Yeah, only if you lay off Ray.
That's Thank you.
Thanks, Buster. Take care, Buster. Buster Olney, joining us every week, our ESPN MLB insider.
That's going to be tough.
I'm going to put that on my resume. Buster Olney defends me against critics.
Defending the Seattle Mariners. How about that?
I'm just excited maybe the Mariners can go acquire Brandon Drury from the Yankees at this
sure,
point.
Sure, why not? I mean, the Yankees certainly have plenty to sell off at this point. I mean, that home run by Bird, I was watching that Paw Sox game the other night. Man, he hit one 9 miles down at McCoy Stadium.
By the way, what's coming up on the Champlain Valley game night?
Well, we're going to be talking about how this playoff series emphasizes to me what the biggest need for the Celtics is moving forward. But I still think the Celtics win tonight.
All right. So what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, did Robert Kraft hurt the Patriots with comments he made today? One reputable publication thinks so.
I think so, too. We'll get to that.
The end.
If you think what Arnie says on the show is irritating, you should hear him during the commercial break. It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady, only on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
Rich massaging my leg during the break, and I appreciate that.
What?
My knee is just a little...
Disgusting thought.
What? What if you were a chiropractor?
I could. Well, I would never be a chiropractor because I'd have to massage your leg.
Could you imagine if I came into you? Gross. Rich, come massage my leg. Oh, and my back hurts, too. Come massage my back. Disgusting.
Would you pay 50 grand? Would you pay 50 grand for it?
If you'd pay me 50 grand, maybe I would give you a massage. Maybe.
All right, Brady, what's going on? What did Robert Kraft have to say today?
Well, Robert Kraft today, he goes... let's see. He said that, well...
He was talking about Belichick.
He was talking about Brady, Tom Brady. I'm just trying to find the exact quota here on my...
Well, he said that Brady and Gronk were...
No, he publicly backed Tom Brady, said he'd be there at mandatory minicamp. He assured everyone he'd be there when the practices become mandatory, and he says all things are fine between him and Belichick. But he also said that Brady is a busy guy with a family. And he added, I was thinking back to when Brady joined us, where he's blessed to have 3 children now and he's built a number of businesses and has certain responsibilities. I think it's very hard for him to fulfill those during the season and the commitment he has to football.
All right, a couple of things on that. First of all, the fact that he said that Brady and Gronk will both be at mandatory minicamp goes to show me that he went out of their way to call them and ask them. Why would he ask them a question? Did he ask them last year and the year before and the year before? The answer is no. He wanted to know what the hell was going on, which goes to show you what the answer to what we gave yesterday, Brady, was absolutely right. It is a big deal that these two guys were not at OTAs, and Kraft's like, hey, I'm the owner. I want to know what the hell is going on now. I could see him speaking to Brady just by picking up the phone because maybe he wanted to speak to Brady.
Right.
But I think it's too much of a coincidence that he spoke to Brady and Gronk and both, and he asked them both, are you coming to mandatory camp? Why would you ask that all of a sudden? And I'm sure he didn't ask that year in and year out since 2008 or whenever the last time Brady missed OTA. So
You don't think that he's in touch constantly with the two guys that make him a fortune?
I don't think he's in touch with Gronk as much as Brady, but I don't think he asked them, are you coming to mandatory minicamp? Why would you ask him that unless you had some doubt in your mind?
I don't think there is any doubt that he's coming to anything that's called mandatory.
But then why would you ask?
Because I think he probably has asked him this every year. You don't think that he wants to make sure that Brady and Gronk are happy at all times? I suspect the three of them are in constant, well, not constant, but they're in touch with each other a lot. And I'll bet you it's Kraft who initiates those phone conversations.
Well, Nesson thinks it's a huge deal, and I tend to agree. I don't know that I go huge, but I think it's noteworthy of this. Even if I don't believe what you just said is true, Rich, but even if it was that Kraft is constantly in touch with Brady, isn't that sending the wrong message to Belichick that he doesn't trust Belichick to make all the football-related decisions that he says he does? I mean, if he is going, I mean, doesn't that undermine your head coach if the owner is taking it on himself to talk to these two players and not looping in the head coach on things?
I'm not sure Kraft thinks about it that way.
He's supposed to. He's the head of a business.
Brady. I think he's always looked at a father. I mean, how many times have we talked about the father-son relationship? I don't think he's thinking, well, I better not call Tom today because Bill Belichick might find out. I think he just has a relationship with him.
Brady, I don't remember you saying last year Kraft spoke to Gronk and Brady and they're going to be at mandatory training camp. That wasn't an issue last year. Kraft didn't have to say that last year or the year before or the year before. He said it now because it's an issue, Brady. That's why he did that.
And Nesson's exact words were this: never mind being on the same page. Kraft and Belichick aren't even reading out of the same book right now. Okay? And Nesson says, we're fairly certain Brady isn't the only player with kids and business opportunities and business interests. And while OTAs are optional, Kraft endorsing Brady's ability to skip them directly contradicts the principles on which Belichick has built the winning environment in Foxborough, that no one is bigger than the team, even Brady.
Well, I disagree. Brady is bigger than the team, and I think that they're just pushing this under the rug. You can't tell me that the rules apply to the backup punter the same thing. I mean, if a backup punter or a third-string left tackle doesn't show up, you better believe the rules are different than if Brady doesn't show up. It's completely different.
And by the way, people hold out all the time because of contracts. So I'm not saying Brady's holding out for a contract, but this is his way of getting a little bit of time, you know, on his side. Because he's, you know, usually the first guy there, last guy to leave and all that baloney. No, I think this is his, again, he's not holding out or anything, and other people hold out. So why is that okay? Why is this such a big deal if he doesn't want to go ahead and come and work out, you know, with the team? He's doing it because he's sending a message. I understand that. And if you don't understand that, Rich, and matter of fact, who sent in the text? Was it Vince?
Yeah.
Said, denial is not just a river in Egypt, my friend. Because
12-4.
You're really in denial here if you don't think something's going on. And I will tell you this. I'll even make this prediction. Tom Brady and or Bill Belichick will not finish their careers in football with the New England Patriots. They'll both either play, one will either play somewhere else or coach somewhere else. I promise you that.
As far as what Nesson has to say, too, about it, I just think that if I were another player, I would be a bit offended at what Robert Kraft had to say. Now, I understand that not every player can be treated the same, and Brady has more leeway. I understand that. But Brian Hoyer doesn't have a wife and kids that he wants to be with.
No.
But we're going to, you know.
That's why I'm saying the rules are different Brady. I'm not
Jimmy Johnson told us that.
Yeah.
Brian Hoyer?
I'm just saying, when you say that, it's okay because he's got other things to do. He's got a family and business. He's not the only one with families and business.
I understand.
Someone doesn't have a sick parent or a wife or kids to go home to. You miss me with that.
Well, I would tell Brian Hoyer, if you look at me the wrong way, I'm going to cut you because that's how insignificant you are to this team. I mean, there's a big difference. You have to treat your stars differently.
So you're
okay
with
him
being gone.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so then why have you made a big deal about it all week? It said it's a big deal.
No, it's a big deal that he's not. I'm behind Tom Brady for being gone. I think he's sending a message, though. That's why I think it's a big deal. I think he's saying, blank you, Bill Belichick, because you haven't shown me any respect the last 2 years, and this is what I'm going to give you back. I'm going to go ahead and give you a little bit back. That's why I think it's a big deal, but I'm on Brady's side on this.
But how is it a big deal if Brady comes out and throws 32 for 50 on opening day and they win 40 to nothing?
Because I think it's taking the already the relationship, and it's going beyond repair now.
If Brady were 30, this would concern me.
I think Brady's ready to finish out the rest of his career having that crack in the relationship with Belichick, and I think Belichick's fine having the crack in the relationship with Brady. I don't think they even have to make up anymore.
But I thought you just said one of them's not going to be a Patriot at the end of his
career. Yes, I think Bill Belichick will end up coaching another team.
That wouldn't surprise me
eventually. I would think that more so than Brady going to another team. I really believe that.
I'm going
to
take – I don't think Brady's going anywhere else now because Kraft won't let him. Kraft just supports him so much he's not going to let him.
And by the way, is there any doubt in your mind now who called the shot on the trade?
No.
So for Jimmy Garoppolo, any doubt in anybody's mind, there shouldn't be now. It's no doubt that Robert Kraft said, first of all, you don't trade Jimmy Garoppolo for a second-round pick until you pick up the phone and you tell the owner, I'm only getting a second-round pick. And I bet you Belichick didn't even try to get a better thing. And you know what? Kraft said, fine, take the damn second-round pick. I don't give a damn.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't give it. That's exactly what he did.
And it helped the fact that Brady was 39-40 at the time, whatever, yeah. And still playing like he was possessed.
Rich, I'm going to take a page out of Arnie's book here and say the show is today. Yes, if you look back on September 10th or whenever opening day is, and he's gone 35 for 37 and thrown for 555 yards and 17 touchdowns and no picks, then sure, you can look back and say that it's not a big deal. But if they do lose game one, then you can look back and say right. It was a huge deal. We're talking about today.
Right.
And it's a big deal for what Arnie says about if there's messaging being sent, but even more so than that, it's important to me because Brady has told us over and over and over again in his career how important OTAs are, how they set the foundation. And for him to deviate from that script, and for a guy who just spent a full year developing time versus time to tell us how much he loves football, for him to willingly take himself away from that, I think is noteworthy.
No, I'm willing to say that it's noteworthy. I'm willing to say that he is sending a message. But I'm also saying that as a Patriots fan, I just don't think when it all comes out in the wash, this is going to make any difference.
You're probably right on that.
Are we
going
to care when the Patriots are 7-0 or 7-1 and they're annihilating teams at the halfway mark as to whether Tom Brady showed up for OTAs, months ago.
But if they get off to a bad start and they start off 0-3, people go, he didn't go to OTAs.
I completely agree with you. I
mean, think about it, though. Both things can be true, though. I mean, you look back at last year's Red Sox season, would you say that if the Red Sox did go on to win the World Series, that it was not a big deal that Dustin Pedroia threw his teammates under the bus? But they didn't win the World Series, so it became a huge deal. I mean, you're looking at it the exact same way. Yep. You're looking at the outcome as a way to justify or not justify what has happened. We're talking about the show today, and I will say this too. If I were players that are on the bubble of being cut that want reps with Tom Brady, I think that's a big deal too. For a guy who famously champions getting rapport with his teammates, if I'm Jeremy Hill, Jordan Matthews, Cordarrelle Patterson, any of these guys that are on the bubble for the roster, I'd be disappointed that he's not there.
Can you tell me the new NFL kickoff rules? I'm a little weary on this, to be honest with you. I don't think I fully understand the whole five on one side and there's no two-man wedge or something? Did I by not understanding this whole thing right or what?
Well, the NFL passed new kickoff rules today, again, at those meetings in Atlanta. And here's basically what we're looking at.
It's a lot.
We're looking at, and the simplest way I can tell you is that you're looking at this becoming less and less of a collision play. What is happening is on the kickoff side,
right,
on the kicking team side, they usually are allowed to stand 5 yards off the line of scrimmage.
That's gone.
Now it's one.
Oh, right. So you can't build up that forward momentum.
Perfect.
So you cannot so you are not going to get that running head of steam.
Right. Perfect.
Also, from the receiver's side,
yes,
the blockers cannot basically go, they cannot block until the ball has been caught.
Or
it hits the ground.
Right, there you go.
So rather than them get a full head of steam and run at the kicking team and you're starting to block at midfield, they're going to basically run
backwards
in the way that you do on a punt.
But they do that. I thought they did that off kickoffs anyway, though.
No, because what happens is that everybody would, you know, you'd have two guys in the back and then two more guys and two more guys. So now all of those receiving team players have to be much closer to the kickoff itself, and then they're going to immediately run back. So you're going to take out the head of steam collisions.
Right.
But what I think is going to happen, actually, it will get safer because you're not going to have these guys running full steam at each other. I also think it's going to make the kickoff more exciting because there's going to be more balls returned and there's going to be a better chance probably of guys maybe returning it for touchdowns. I don't have a problem with this.
What's the wedge story I was bringing? I don't understand that whole thing.
You can't wedge block, which basically means you can't have two or three guys in a line holding hands with each other that sets up the block.
I thought you could wedge block outside certain part. So
they had changed that a few years ago, and now they're getting rid of it.
First thought I had when I hear you can't have the forward progress, lots of offsides. Because it's going to take, I think there's going to be maybe in the preseason, there's going to be a lot of offsides on kickoffs. If you're only a yard off the line of scrimmage and you want some sort of a head of steam, refs are going to have to be on the ball for that.
Yeah. I think it's going to be safer. I think you're going to get more teams maybe returning touchdowns, which if that happens, the fan wins.
I wonder if we're going to get more penalties now. Lower your head.
Yeah, that, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, other stuff, too, if we're going to start seeing a rash. You know what?
Just what we need.
If you're going to call more penalties on that, you got to take away then. I got to demand that you don't call every holding penalty or every small infraction that's in the pit there. You know what I mean? I can't have that then.
Kickoffs, it's blocking the back. Well, that's the biggie.
But if you're going to start calling them in that and we're going to with the head down, something's got to give. I can't have all that. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, we're going to get back into the Celtics.
All right, we got to give predictions too. I want to get some scores because every time we give a score, the Celtics win. So we got to do that also. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
And you thought the ESPN Network hosts were opinionated.
Unsupportable opinion.
It's The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, I just wrote my final score for the game tonight.
Okay.
Okay.
I got it in. I feel pretty good about
that.
And? Oh, should I tell you now?
I don't know. You want
to? Cavs 104, Celtics 100.
Wow,
is that a high scoring game? No, that's about
no. I'm
204.
I'm surprised that you have the
close game.
Celtics losing.
I have no confidence. Look, I know it's 2-2, and the fact that the Celtics took the first two and the way they lost the last two, I feel like the Cavaliers have all the momentum. I don't know if it would have went 1-1-1-1, kind of like what's going on with the Golden State Houston thing. Maybe I'd feel different. I think there's a big difference between how you get the 2-2, whether you start off 0-2 and then win 2. Remember, what was it? Was it last year the Celtics lost the first two at home?
They were on the road.
Well, they were the home.
Yes.
Who was it? Who did they lose to?
They lost to Cleveland.
No. The first round, they lost the first two.
Oh, they lost to Chicago.
Yeah. Then they came back and won. I would have said, no way they're going to.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yep.
So, look, I feel Cleveland's got all the momentum. LeBron is just playing just incredibly
nuts. Out of his mind right now.
It's insane. Yep. And I'm only giving him a 4-point victory. I'm going to go with Cleveland. I'm actually surprised they even have it close.
Okay. Well, listen up because I did nail the first loss and just missed the second
loss. I'm writing
loss.
It down this time because I don't believe you when you
say
that.
No, I said they'd lose. I said Cleveland would win game 3 by 20 or 30. And I told the guy over at the Colonial Deli Mart that they would win by 30. That's exactly what they won by. Thank you very much.
Well,
and then I said the Cleveland would win by 7 the other night, and it was 9.
Well, give us the score now.
Boston 111, Cleveland 105.
Wow. That's a high scoring one.
Well, it's Cleveland-Boston, yeah.
I'm going Boston 103, Cleveland 97.
Yeah, we're in the same ballpark.
Yeah, 103-97.
How can you pick against the Celtics in a home game right now? I mean, I need to see a loss before. And the whole season's on the line. Celtics lose tonight and they're done.
If it was that easy, people would be making a boatload of money on this one. But Celtics, pretty much a pick 'em or 1-point favorite. As you mentioned, they haven't lost at home. How could you not lose at home and only be a pick 'em game because you've lost the last two? That's why.
Well, it's because LeBron James is on the other side.
Well, that too. Yeah, that does help. That does help a little bit.
The key for this game, and it feels like I've been saying this all series, the key in this game is ball movement, and it had started with my thought being about the Cavaliers needed better ball movement. Well, now the Celtics need better ball movement. The Celtics is the offense that has gone more stagnant recently, okay? I mean, listen to this. In the last two games, the Cavaliers have averaged 29 open, uncontested shots per game. That's predicated on ball movement. They've had 29 uncontested shots per game over the last two games, and it's all because of their ball movement. The Celtics, okay, the first two games of the series averaged 36.5 uncontested shots per game. But their passing has dropped off such a cliff that they've now gotten 18.5 uncontested shots per game. They're getting half as many uncontested shots, and that's not because they're
off on the road.
That's because they're not passing like they did in games 1 and 2. I think they're going to rectify that and get back to who they need to be.
I wonder what Golden State is, because they have so many great shooters. You know, they've got to be open. You know, they just pass till somebody's open and get the shot like that.
But they also have some ISO players that could play ISO. The Celtics don't have too many ISO-type players right now.
Right.
When missing Kyrie Irving, they don't have as many, hey, create off-the-dribble pull-up guys.
It's kind of interesting right now with the Final Four, if you will, in the NBA, because you look at the two series, and they're completely different from each other. You know, both teams in the West are 1-1 at home, and it's like the only thing they have in common, and most of the games have been blowouts, but the last couple, including last night, which was a thriller, have been close. So it's getting fun now.
You know, I just want to bring that up. Kevin Durant, you pass up the final shot. He was just horrible in the fourth quarter. But and I heard everybody talking about this. Could you imagine if LeBron, who passed it to, what was it, Kyle Korver that one time, We still don't let that down. Could you imagine if LeBron would be all over him? And you know, Kevin Durant just passes it up.
Right, but what about if you have a situation where LeBron, with 4 seconds left, has a triple team, which would be highly likely.
Okay, I understand
and
that, though.
Korver, right. One of the great three-point shooters in the NBA over the last 10 years, is standing all alone
right,
in the corner.
Right, right, right. No, I understand that, but people will still be critical because they want the superstar to take the last shot. That's what you're getting paid a gazillion dollars for. Yeah. Surprise, Kevin Durant went ahead and go ahead and give it to somebody else. Golden State, that may cost them the series. I mean, right now it's the best of 3-2. Those games are in Houston, for crying out loud.
This is going to be a fun few days for basketball fans. I have no idea where either of these series are going.
That's going to be awesome.
What do you got in the hockey game tonight?
I'm going to go with Washington just for wishful thinking, but that's about it.
Yeah, and if it happens, I hope Ovechkin scores. Right. I hope it goes double overtime. I've got to go out tonight where there's multiple TVs. This is one of the more unbelievable sports nights of the year.
It's awesome.
I'm just taking Tampa because they're home, and it hasn't made any difference in this
series. No, it hasn't.
But, I mean, it's impossible to make a call on a game like this in a Game 7 where both home teams are, 1-2?
Yeah.
I mean,
but Washington overall, what are they, 4-5 at home in?
Yeah, something
in the play,
like
something
that.
Horrible.
I lost the first two to Columbus in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, they got down 2-0 immediately and then came back
and
stormed.
Fight back.
It's just so much fun about the NHL is you just make the playoffs and get your goalie.
I want you to know something because my guy at Fox is a ratings guy. The NHL has not done well. I think it was like a little over 2 million compared to the NBA per game, roughly. I'm giving you a rough estimate. It was in the 7 to 8 million per game.
Trust me, these are the wrong teams, and secretly they won't say anything, but the NHL is not thrilled that Vegas, Winnipeg, Tampa, and Washington are your final four.
I think they're okay with Vegas. I think that's like everybody's town.
Well, there's a story
Everybody's been
there.
To Vegas, you know what I mean? Everybody's been, that's everybody's hometown there. So, we're curious to see what the ratings are on that one, but I really want them because Vegas and Tampa, forget about it. I might not even tune in just to see some third period games. And see what Vegas does.
Shame on you.
Yeah, shame on me. All right, I got two last story standings as we wrap up today's show. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, mistake of the day. Rob in Swanton because, Brady, you came up with the wrong concoction.
I read the wrong recipe for a Four Horsemen, apparently.
Oh, boy.
But he only gave you three drinks in the Four Horsemen.
Well, no. There's also the Three Wise Men.
Okay.
So he got mad at me for both of them.
There you go.
And apparently he has a history with liquor. Is that correct? He said he was a bartender or something.
He said that he
knows
knew
his liquor.
Whiskey.
Yes.
Knows. Okay.
All right. So the mistake of the day brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniform in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. All right. Last story standing. No more of this creepy character. I really disliked him. No offense. I don't like anybody to get fired. But Dr. Pepper made a major mistake when they went with that, what is it, Larry Culpepper character? They canned him. He's gone. That, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
There? No, it's
I
only
don't
been
watch
the,
a lot of TV. So he,
Brady, tell him it's
he can't be any creepier than the Burger King King.
Well, he's creepier because he's a real person, though.
Oh,
and nobody liked him. I mean, he was the guy. He was all over every Dr. Pepper commercial.
He just looks like a normal vendor.
Yeah, he was a vendor with selling the Dr. Pepper and stuff. Oh, he was just horrible, absolutely horrible. People were all over Twitter going, "Yes, finally, you did the right thing by canning him." So he's gone. I don't know what Dr. Pepper's new mascot is.
23 flavors.
23 flavors, right, but I don't know what they're going to use as a thing. Oh, people got that wrong in trivia yesterday, by the way.
How many flavors were in Dr. Pepper?
No, how many flavors are in Baskin-Robbins?
Yeah, a lot of people said 32 in trivia last night.
Oh, I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Really? 31!
That was the only one I knew.
31 flavors.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
I haven't been to a Baskin-Robbins in like 15 years. There's no Baskin-Robbins in Albany, New York.
No, there's not around.
I don't think there's one around here, is
there?
The last time I had a Baskin-Robbins when I was living in Cary, North Carolina.
Wow. You've been around for a kid.
Yeah.
Man.
And my other story was going to be vandals, a bunch of kids, thug kids, at Little Cubs Field that ripped off the arm of Harry Carey from the statue.
Oh.
I know.
At Little Cubs Field. Not Little Wrigley at Travis Roy.
No, Little Cubs Field.
Where's that?
in Chicago.
Yeah. Okay. Shocker.
And they ripped off his arm. So now it's just Harry with just one arm.
Jail time. Oh, I mean, you can't do that.
Juvie?
Yeah, look. Can we have how Harry Carey feels about having his arm ripped off, please?
Holy cow. Well, that's why
that's Bob Uecker.
Oh, sorry.
Hi, everybody. Harry Carey here. Leave my arm intact. Tyler Houston. Now to the plate.
There you go. Randy, what's coming up on Champagne Valley
Sean
game night?
Sean Dunstan.
I shouldn't have got him started.
Harry, what's coming up on Champagne Gary game night?
We'll be talking about the Celtics and why they'll beat the Cavs and what they need in the offseason.
There you go. For intern...
Kevin.
Intern Kevin, who we still haven't met. For Brady and Rich, I'm Arnie. Champagne Valley game night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.